sixth case is Ripberger v. Corazon. Mr. Darst?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Plaintiff Diane Ripberger was a very good employee. She had worked for the Indiana Department of Corrections for 19 years and had good reviews, no negative comments before she supported her supervisor's complaints of sex discrimination. Her supervisor was Connie Orton Bell, who had complained about several instances of sex discrimination, culminating in the complaints of Ms. Ripberger and Connie Orton Bell that other employees were using their desks after hours. The Pendleton Correctional Facility said, don't worry about it. It's not involving offenders, just staff having sex on your desk. And they continued to complain about sex discrimination and that that should not happen. The Pendleton Correctional Facility instructed them to wash down their desks every morning because of the sex on their desks, and they complained about that. Pendleton Correctional Facility then terminated Connie Orton Bell and privatized the positions of the position of Diane Ripberger and similar positions, and did not hire her. She was the only employee in that category of substance abuse counselor who was not hired at the Pendleton complex, which consists of three separate facilities. So there is a pattern of sex discrimination against women at the Pendleton Correctional Facility, and especially retaliation against women who complain about the sex discrimination. The district court in this case found a prima facie case of sex discrimination, age discrimination, and retaliation. The only thing the court did not find was pretext, and so that was the only issue in the case, the only factual issue or issue relating to facts. The company Corizon claimed later that they wanted a continuity of care and offered that as the reason for the pretext stage. Ms. Ripberger was the most qualified applicant, and therefore hiring her would have been the continuity of care. IDOC had a listing of the requirements for the substance abuse counselors who were good to go, which would be meaning continuity of care. And she was listed as good to go. She was in the gray area. There were two employees in the yellow area, two employees in the red area who were not qualified.
May I just interrupt you for a moment? I think this would be a very different case if we didn't have a situation where her position was eliminated. Right, so she's very qualified, clearly, in comparison to many of the other individuals in the record. But they did eliminate her position when Corizon came in. So then she was put in this queue with others who were less experienced than she. Isn't that accurate?
A little bit. The position area that she was in was eliminated. The area was the inside dorms. They decided not to service those. The part of the facility that she was in was the outside dorm that was continued to have positions there. So those dorms were in the same facility of the Pendleton Correctional Facility, which used to be called the Indiana State Reformatory. She had worked both in the inside dorms and the outside, inside dorm and the outside dorms. In fact, she was so good that she had helped Connie Orton Bell, her supervisor, developed the program for the outside dorm. She was also so good that she worked with the more violent offenders inside the facility for their substance abuse counseling. So she was the best of the best. She could work anywhere. She was on the her position was on the manning table for the Indiana Reformatory, which was all dorms, of course. They don't separate jobs into this dorm or that dorm. It's for the facility. She had worked all those jobs. She was the most qualified. And one of the telling things is that the other person who was working for the Indiana Reformatory was Randy Smith, the very much younger male. He was hired by Corizon, supposedly in the place of Diane Ripberger. But he was not, when he was hired, assigned to the Indiana Reformatory outside dorm or the inside dorm or any place. He was placed over at the other facility, the Correctional Industrial Facility. So the pretext offered by Corizon didn't make any sense at all. They not only did not hire the most qualified person, the person that they did hire and claimed to hire in her place was not even assigned to the Indiana Reformatory, and he was the only person who was assigned to that facility.
Okay, but you don't allege, right, that the position that she held that was eliminated, that was eliminated pretextually. You don't challenge that. You agree that that was a legitimate restructuring when Corizon came in?
Yes, you're correct. But that is not her position. That was a position area.
I think
it's been called position, but she clarified in her deposition that was not her entire position. It was the position area of inside dorms. But her position covered all of the Indiana Reformatory, and she was the one who had worked in both the inside dorms and the outside dorms. As a matter of fact, when the Department of Corrections finally rehired her in another position for her rehire rights as a correctional counselor, not a substance abuse counselor, placed her at the outside dorm, same facility, the outside dorm. Corizon then said, oh, she's complained about discrimination in court and implied you need to move her, and the Department of Corrections did move her, so even moved her out of the outside dorm then. Corizon did not want her working there, and the Indiana Department of Corrections did not want her working there because she had supported Connie Orton Bell's complaints, and then plaintiff Diane Ripperger herself had complained about discrimination. So there was a pattern of discrimination against other women at the Pendleton Correctional Facility, and then there was a pattern of discrimination against Ms. Ripperger herself because she was not rehired by the Indiana Department of Corrections and Corizon working together, and their representative was paid by the Indiana Department of Corrections and was working for Corizon in hopes of being employed by Corizon. And that person was Mr. Schoenrat. He did not rehire her for that position at the Indiana Reformatory. Then secondly, the Indiana Department of Corrections refused to rehire her for her rehire rights for any position. Superintendent did not want her there. She has supported this person who'd been terminated.
And may I ask specifically then, the retaliation is in relationship to her physical presence at the hearings for her colleague? Or because she was not a called witness, I think you called her a silent witness, right?
Correct.
And so that's based upon that one supervisor seeing her at that hearing?
Well, before that, the superintendent, Finnan, had sent other employees to her to find out what Orton Bell was doing with her case after Orton Bell was terminated. Mm-hmm. So that started back then, and they were trying to find out through Diane Ripperger what Connie Orton Bell was doing, and then told her not to associate with Connie Orton Bell, and she said, yeah, I'm going to. She's my friend, and I have lunch with her, and I'm going to continue associating with her, and they got upset about that. But what really ticked them off was that the superintendent was angry that she actually appeared at the hearing where Connie Orton Bell complained to the state about discrimination. And then when the superintendent, after he testified and left, gave Diane Ripperger looks of irritation, disgust, and very shortly thereafter, she was called by someone that she'd had no contact with at Corizon who said, you're not selected. She had been working with the designated contact of Corizon at the Pendleton Correctional Facility, at the Pendleton Complex, by the name of Mary Mansfield, and I talked to Mary Mansfield about the applications and the job and what positions Corizon was going to take, and Mary Mansfield encouraged her. And then after Mary Mansfield was not asked anything about continuity of care, and she would have known about who was doing what and who was most experienced and what continuity of care would be effectuated by whom, She was not asked about that. She admitted to Diane Ripperger that she was not hired because she had supported Connie Orton Bell. I hope I've gotten those names correct. And so, and the applications, you look at the applications, and the applications show that some of the applicants had not, one applicant had not submitted an application. There were other papers that were submitted. Another applicant had not submitted a last page. Randy Smith only submitted an application on the day that Diane Ripper was told she was not selected. So there, the evidence is replete with evidence of pretext. And we ask the court to rule in favor of appellant Diane Ripperger and remand the case for trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Doris. Mr. Hollis.
Good afternoon, Judge Rovner. Good afternoon, Judge Flom and Judge Kendall, and to my distinguished opponent, Mr. Darst. Edward Hollis, representing the defendant, Corizon, Inc. Quote, I told her never to call me again and hung up on her. Close quote.
Could you just speak a little
Yes, I'm sorry. Quote, I told her never to call me again and hung up on her. Close quote. That's a direct quote from Ms. Ripperger's affidavit, which appears in the record at the supplemental appendix, page 59. That's the reason Ms. Ripperger was not employed by Corizon. It was by her choice. To go back to a question from Judge Kendall, and respectfully, I believe that the reply confuses the various areas of Pendleton, the Pendleton Correctional Facility. So it may be helpful to kind of respond and clarify in terms of caseload. Prior to the outsourcing and prior to Corizon being retained to provide substance abuse counseling, there were seven counselors at Pendleton. All of the other counselors after the outsourcing had a continuing caseload of the same patients before and immediately after the transition. Ms. Ripperger, however, did not, because at the time she was treating only level four offenders in the inside dorm. Indeed, testified she had worked only in the inside dorm of the Indiana Reformatory portion of Pendleton throughout the entirety of 2010. Her caseload was not going to continue after the outsourcing because the level four offender treatment program would not continue there. Indeed, in her own testimony on page 76 of her deposition, which is at page 27 of the supplemental appendix, quote, there's no one inside the facility doing that job at this time. They didn't put anybody in that area. They closed it down completely.
But what is your explanation for Superintendent Finn's comment that there might be a reason why Ripperger was feeling like she was at the short end of the stick?
Sure, Your Honor. First of all, it's important to note that Mr. Finnan is not a Corizon employee.
Say it again.
Mr. Finnan is not a Corizon employee. He was employed by the Department of Corrections.
Yeah.
And there's no evidence that his this alleged influence by Mr. Finnan over the hiring decisions by Corizon. In fact, Ms. Ripperger specifically testified that she was basing that on speculation and said, quote, I don't have any facts. It's subjective. So she says that this conversation occurred on August 13th, which incidentally, by the way, is 6 days before the hearing on August 19th, where she says Mr. Finnan was upset at her. And therefore, that conversation could not have been precipitated by a hearing that had not yet occurred. In any event, there's simply no evidence that Mr. Finnan's views had any impact on Corizon's hiring at all. To the contrary, Mr. Schoenrat specifically testified that he was the sole decision maker here and that he did not consider in any way Ms. Orton Bell's prior hearing in complaints against the Department of Corrections. Indeed, the record evidence shows that Mr. Schoenrat offered to provide a reference to Ms. Orton Bell and that he was favorably disposed towards her.
But given Ms. Mansfield's involvement in the interview process, it is safe to assume at this stage of the proceedings that she was involved with Corizon's hiring decisions. I mean, why else would she participate in interviewing the Pendleton employees for positions?
Sure, and I'm happy to address that as well, Your Honor. Ms. Mansfield, although employed by Corizon, was not a decision maker here. The evidence is undisputed that Mr. Schoenrat alone made the decisions as to the hiring plan, and that Ms. Mansfield did not participate in any hiring decisions. And there's 2 points in the record where that comes through clearly. First of all, at Supplemental Appendix, page 109, Ms. Mansfield specifically testified that she was not involved in the decision-making. It's on page 30, lines 11 through 24 of her deposition. Also, Ms. Ripberger was asked in her deposition, well, was Ms. Mansfield a decision maker? And she testified that she was not aware as to whether Ms. Mansfield was a decision maker. So the evidence in the record is undisputed that Ms. Mansfield was not, in fact, a decision maker. Her presence during the interview was simply because she was what was known as the HSA, or Health Services Administrator for Corizon, locally there at the facility, which had provided other health services unrelated to the substance abuse before this outsourcing occurred. Ms. Mansfield had never supervised any of the substance abuse counselors at the facility because they were Department of Corrections employees. She was a Corizon employee. So she simply had no role in the decision-making process. With respect to the sex discrimination claim, and we do believe that the district court was more lenient than it needed to be with Ms. Ripberger, and it found that a prima facie case had been made. We don't believe that it had, but we're content to rest on the briefing with respect to that issue. The argument that the parties are primarily focused on deals with respect to pretext, and as the district court concluded, quote, there's simply no evidence that Ms. Ripberger was discriminated against because of her sex. Indeed, the evidence is to the contrary. The evidence shows that 67% of the counselors hired at Pendleton were female, four out of the six who were hired. Statewide, 59% of the...
But is there evidence in the record that she was moved from the good-to-go list for rehire to the do-not-hire list shortly after she testified in Orton Bell's discrimination?
No, Your Honor, there's a little bit of confusion about this good-to-go chart. The chart in the record that is cited by the appellant was not the chart put together by Mr. Schoenrott and relied upon for hiring decisions. That chart, cited by the appellant, had to do with certification, whether particular counselors had a certification or not as of the time of the hiring decisions. That wasn't, though, a factor used by Mr. Schoenrott in his hiring decisions. The chart that is in the record and which was used by him appears at Supplemental Appendix 96, and then the actual chart, the affidavit, at Supplemental Appendix 100 through 104. That was the chart that talked about the placement decisions. The court will note when it looks at that chart, Mr. Smith and Ms. Ripberger were listed on the same line as alternate possibilities for a final spot at Pendleton. That is because at the time that chart was put together, there was some notion that Mr. Smith was about perhaps to be called up to duty, I believe in the reserves, for possible military service. That turned out not to be the case. He did apply for a position and received that position. And so the bottom line is it boils down, as I said before, there were seven positions available at Pendleton before the outsourcing. After the outsourcing, there were only six available. Using the continuity of care standard, which was the primary standard that Corizon used to make its decisions on placement, there was simply not a spot there for Ms. Ripberger. But as the court has noted already, she did have considerable skill in working in particular with level four offenders. And there was a need by Corizon for people to treat level four offenders, particularly at another facility fairly close by, within an hour or so drive, the Miami Correctional Facility. There, not only were they receiving an influx of more level four offenders, but three of the Department of Corrections substance abuse counselors who had been providing treatment to folks at that facility did not apply. So there was both a need and openings. That was what the Corizon recruiter tried to convey to her on the phone on August 19th and met with that rebuff from her, don't ever call me again, and she hung up on her. Had she not done so, she could have been placed at Miami and would have had that employment. Indeed, several days later, she followed up with an email to Mr. Schoenrott in which she sarcastically thanked him for placing her in a position 2 years earlier that ultimately was going to be eliminated. He reiterated to her the availability of positions in Miami, and she responded, no thanks, I have no intent to travel. Had she not responded in that way, again, she could have had employment with Corizon.
How many miles are we talking about?
I believe it's about 90 miles or so.
How
so
many?
60 miles.
60 to 90, something in there, hour and a half. So it would have been a farther drive.
See, it's... Let me just think. All right. How far away is Putnamville from her home?
That I don't know the answer to. That was another facility where they had some openings as well. I believe that one is further away than Miami is.
How far? And Miami is how?
I want to say 60 to 90 minutes.
60 to 90 minutes.
It's up by Kokomo. as compared to
Pendleton. So how does that compare with the distance to Pendleton?
Pendleton would definitely have been closer to her home.
Yeah.
And that's what she was really upset about, is she didn't want to travel.
Yeah,
she wanted.
How much?
How much of a difference would it have been? Yeah. I think that Pendleton is probably roughly 25 minutes from her home, whereas...
Boy, that's a lot, isn't it?
It is, but it's also worth noting that when she had previously worked for the Department of Corrections, previously before retiring and then coming out of retirement in 2008, she'd worked while living in Anderson up in Michigan City at a facility up there with a much longer commute. So it's certainly not unheard of. But the bottom line is that they had an opportunity to provide her a chance for employment there in Miami, and they did. This was not a case where they were seeking to exclude her from employment or said, sorry, we have nothing for you at Pendleton, so you're out of luck, directly to the contrary. I should also briefly mention with respect to her age claim and her retaliation claim, both are subject to a higher but-for causation standard, and she simply can't make that. Five of the six counselors at Pendleton that were hired were over 40. One was older than her. Statewide, 10 or nearly 20% of the hires were older than her. So there's no evidence to support that as well. And I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Hollis. Darcy, your time has expired, but you may have an additional 2 minutes.
Thank you. The Supreme Court has recently made clear that but-for is not a higher standard. The statement of Corizon that the Miami facility was fairly close is not correct. It is north of Kokomo up by Grissom Air Force Base near Bunker Hill, Indiana, and is about more than 60 minutes and about 90 minutes away. The distance between Anderson and Pendleton is not 25 minutes. It's less than that. I guess it depends on how you drive, but I would estimate less than 15 minutes. Certification is a very important thing because the state of Indiana set forth the qualifications in the chart that it gave to Corizon and said who was good to go, meaning continuity, and who was not. And Diane Ripberger was listed in the gray area, which means good to go. It's a gray or white area. It's a good area. The others, two others were listed in the red area. Two others, including Randy Smith, were listed in the yellow area, which meant probably not good to go. And that proved out in that Ripberger was the only one who had a license. She had a social worker's license. All she had to do was pay a renewal fee, and she was good to go. She was continuous. She was there. She was the only one who was. The others did not have a license, and I didn't mention that in my opening. So she was not only good to go, she actually had a license and was the most qualified. Mansfield was in the chain of command for decision-making. She was the one who was going to supervise the selectees, the applicants, and interviewed the applicants with the corporate representative, but was not asked by Schoenrat anything about continuity or anything about that. And she was, and you would ordinarily ask that person who was on the ground. She had not supervised those substance abuse counselors, but she had coordinated all medical services at the Pendleton complex. The person who she told not to call her again was the person who was not helpful at all. She'd never talked to her before, would not listen to her when Diane Ripberger said, I've worked every area at the Indiana Reformatory. This is my job. I'm the incumbent. And that person who'd never talked to her before wouldn't listen to her. So Diane said, please don't talk to me again. Diane was talking to Mary Mansfield, the person on the ground at Pendleton Correctional Facility and Pendleton Complex. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Norris. Thank you, Mr. Hollis. Case is taken under advisement.